Good day and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. Happy Putschke Day. It's a day that is filled with meaning for one member of our congressional delegation here in Michigan. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell continues her late husband John's tradition of delivering Putschke all around southeast Michigan. On this day, she joins us now to talk about what's happening in Washington and around the world and to update us on her profound love of Putschke Day. Debbie, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Stephen, good morning. It's good to be with you in these very interesting times.
Yeah, no, there's a lot going on, and I guess Putschkes are a nice distraction from that. But I got to say, I've never really been a fan of Putschke. I don't like it. It's too sweet for me. But tell me why it means so much to you.
So, and I actually think this year it has more meaning for different reasons. I am, as you know, a person that believes in ritual and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dingell family immigrated to the United States from Poland. Putschkes are a Polish celebration of Fat Tuesday, the last chance to indulge before the fasting days of Lent. And it's in a day that we celebrate the heritage of the cultures that we come from. You know, and traditions like this keep us connected, and they connect generations together. But I think that as we're watching what's happening in Ukraine, mm-hmm. we see so many people fleeing Ukraine, Poland opening its borders, taking in those that need help. It reminds us of 79 years ago,
yeah.
when Russia invaded Czechoslovakia. It reminds us of Germany invading many of these countries in Europe, and that we can't take freedom for granted. So it also, it's just a time of remembrance to learn from history, and also to say to people that America has always been a country of opportunity, and we need to appreciate what we have here in our democracy.
Yeah, those images that you called up there of Russia invading Eastern Europe during the Cold War, of Germany invading Eastern Europe as a prelude to World War II, it kind of reminds us that the instability in that region is not new, that people who live there, people who are from there, are really familiar with what's going on. And that's not a good thing. I mean, that is, I think, a black mark on the international community's ability to thwart this kind of aggression. I mean, when you see these images of people pouring over the Polish border, like you say, you think of black and white images from a really long time ago, and I think you have to stop and wonder, why are we still putting up with and enduring this kind of aggression?
So I'm going to disagree with you a little.
Okay.
And that Eastern Europe has been stable. Much of the world has been stable for decades, and this is the first time since World War II that we have witnessed this kind of aggression, which is an unprovoked attack, quite frankly, and cannot be justified in any way. But the other thing that has happened, we work with our allies, and the other thing that has struck many, and perhaps the person that matters the most, President Putin, is how unified our allies are, how quickly they have worked together on sanctions, freezing bank accounts, to feel the economic consequences of this unjustified aggression. Even Switzerland yesterday, even who has always remained neutral, has frozen Russian assets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a new world order. People respected that peace, never took it for granted. But I don't think that this is the This is the direct action of a tyrant who cannot justify in any way, shape, or form this invasion. And for the most part, the world is reacting together to send that message. And I also want to say to you, the president has been very clear that we will not put boots on the ground. We do not want a military war with Russia. And these are really, really very scary times, delicate times, and we all want diplomacy to be what works.
So I mean, I guess when I think of the instability in that region, though, I guess I'm thinking in the sort of grand historical context. I mean, Eastern Europe and the Caucasus have been in the middle of some contest between East and West since at least the 16th century. And yeah, it's been stable for a time, but much of that stability was because of Russian control of it for a really long time, right? And the tension between East and West played out during the Cold War over that region. And even since the Cold War, Russia has made several gestures toward this exact kind of activity. I mean, it has threatened the former Soviet republics with invasion or some other kind of aggression for a really long time. And so I guess for me, it's that we haven't figured out how to bring long-term stability to that region without the tensions between East and West either threatening or disrupting. And I feel like that's what we're seeing play out right now.
From my perspective, we don't want a war with Russia. But President Putin had no right to launch into a heat. This was clearly a premeditated war. Thousands are going to die. It's disrupting the global economy already. And it's setting a dangerous precedent.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you do when you have someone like Putin that you, I mean, he is a dictator. I mean, that is the truth of the matter. And what he has done is not only an attack on the innocent people of Ukraine, but he's also threatening global peace and security.
Right.
Now, there have been people like that throughout history. And we're always going to have to, you know, we have other countries that we've got delicate relationships with. But this is what he did cannot, we are all working together to use economic sanctions, to use nonviolent means of responding. We've got to work with our international partners to ensure that we've got this, what you're witnessing, this immediate, strong, coordinated response. But whenever there's somebody like Putin, you have to deal with it. But our world order has been stable for a number of decades now. I mean, I remember visiting Ukraine in the early 90s after they had gotten their independence and met with many of these leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that has stunned Putin, maybe some of the people in the world, is the resiliency of the Ukrainians. And they have been incredible these last 6 days as they have shown their strength and their courage. President Zelensky inspires all of us. So, look, it's a scary time. And whenever you've got someone like Putin, you need to worry about him. But I think until now, for the last several decades, at the end of the Cold War, which we really saw with Ronald Reagan and the tearing down of the Berlin Wall and a number of other things, we need to worry. We need to worry about what this is going to do to the world.
Yeah. I'm talking with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, a Democrat from Dearborn, who represents Michigan's 12th congressional district. We're talking on Puchki Day, a day that is very important to her and to the Dingell family, also pretty important to a lot of people here in Southeast Michigan who celebrate this beginning of the Lenten season in religious terms. We're talking about also what's going on in Ukraine and what else is going on in Washington. Debbie, I wonder what you think Congress's role should be right now while we watch what's happening in Ukraine. We're going to hear from President Biden during the State of the Union very soon. Do you expect that he will be asking something, perhaps, of Congress in this matter?
We had a classified briefing last night with all of the leaders, from the Director of Intelligence, Homeland Security, Secretary of State Blinken, Secretary of Defense Austin, Chairman Milley's of the Joint Chiefs, Secretary Granholm, and Secretary Raimondo, talking about all of it. And I must say to you, one of the things that I really want to comment on is there was a bipartisan standing ovation that just was like the first time I've ever seen this happen spontaneously, about the quality of the intelligence that our professionals got and reported. They're not political. They're there to protect us and protect this country. And many did not believe what was being made public. Secretary Blinken, I think it's okay to make this point, talked about talking to one of our allies the same day the invasion started, and it was one of his counterparts, and he said, "You're still saying it's going to start any moment?" And that same person called at 1:30 and said, "Your intelligence has been spot on from the beginning, and you were right."
Wow.
So we need to understand we have real professionals that are working every day to keep us safe. Our question is to all of these men and women, what do we need to do to support you? Do you have the resources? We are clearly trying to give support to the Ukrainians in every way that we possibly can without entering into a military or imminent hostilities that put our men and women in the military in danger. We've got a number of resolutions. Do they need more money? We're asking all of that questions. I do believe, as I said to you earlier, the president's made it clear that there's no military solution to this conflict and that we're not going to deploy U.S. troops to Ukraine. But if the situation escalates, that the president has to come to us, the Congress, for authorization pursuant to the War Powers Resolution before any U.S. troops are deployed into areas or situations where there is a risk of imminent hostilities. Our job is to monitor this, to be supportive, make sure people have the resources, and putting our troops in danger requires congressional action.
So what about the concerns for our economy, for instance, the rising prices we're all seeing from inflation due to this disruption to the global supply chain and the pandemic? Does this war make it more difficult for us? Not that our primary concern should be necessarily ourselves in all of this, but does this aggravate the things that that we're living with right now?
I think it's very important that the president tonight show that he understands what inflation is doing to every household, what is happening when you go to the grocery store, what is happening when you go to the gas station, and what is happening in so many different aspects of our lives. I mean, Cranes today said that rents have gone up 10% in the Detroit area. I think the biggest area, we have been doing things, we're going to continue to do things that are going to address the supply chain issues. Prior to this, I mean, even the Ambassador Bridge has demonstrated what happens when we're relying on another country for our parts, for our supply chain. I think the pandemic shined a light on the need for us to be more self-reliant, bring those supply chains back home, you know, from the PPE equipment to the fact of the matter is almost 90% of our medicine right now is made in China, and that is not good. And we're going to continue. We've got legislation in the past. We need to get it out of a conference committee that's going to address many of these issues, the logistics issues that we're backing up the ports and happening in some of the other countries because of COVID. You're going to start to see those addressed and released there. Oil is a real problem, Stephen. We are still at this hour importing oil from Russia, about 500,000 barrels a day, that is mostly targeted at going to Alaska and Hawaii. Yesterday, Canada announced that it would not import oil anymore. We are at maximum production. We have no more ability to produce liquid natural gas or gas. There are plants that are being built now that hopefully will come online sooner than later. There is nothing waiting for a permit approval. There are more plants ready to be built that need to get underway. But we have to look at our oil supply. What do we do for the short term? How do we address that? And quite frankly, I think it also, we've got to, you know, I've been talking about this since I was a kid, lessen our dependence on foreign oil, and how do we make ourselves self-sufficient, and how do we deploy more renewable resources so that we aren't dependent on fossil fuels from other countries like Russia for our energy supplies. And I think this short-term, we're going to have one set of solutions. Yeah. But midterm and longer-term, I think this creates more, not less need to continue with those strategies.
Yeah. I'm talking with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, a Democrat from Dearborn, who represents Michigan's 12th congressional district. I also want to have you just think a little about what you expect to hear from President Joe Biden with his State of the Union speech tonight. Beyond Ukraine, beyond inflation, he's got quite a bit going on. He's got quite a bit he still has on his agenda to get done. What do you expect to hear from him?
Well, clearly he's going to talk about Ukraine because that's on the minds of everybody. And then the next two issues that I know just from being out and about when I'm home every weekend or when I'm home for the week like I was for the last 2 weeks, people are concerned about COVID. They're sick of COVID. But even though we're sick of COVID and we're done with it, it's not done with us. Mm-hmm. How do we move to the next phase of COVID? How do it's probably here forever, but if we have another surge, how are we going to keep people safe? How do we get back to keeping our schools open, getting people work? The nature of work, by the way, is probably permanently and forever changed, too. But we have to talk about how we move forward with COVID. That he will most certainly talk about. He will address inflation, as you and I just talked about. But, you know, in the midst of all these crises of the last couple of weeks, there's been a new United Nations study that shows how the Earth has warmed up more, the devastating impact it is having in many ways. And we in Michigan saw it ourselves with, we had more than last summer, how many once every 100-year floods did we have just over the course of the summer? So he'll address that. He'll address health care. He'll address how do we lower the cost of prescription drugs. He'll address the issue of public safety and keeping our community safe and what the different ways are that we do that. So I think you're going to hear a speech tonight that is going to address a lot of the issues that are on all of our minds. And he'll also talk about what we have gotten done, how we got the first infrastructure bill passed in decades, and what that means for our communities, just not on fixing our roads and our bridges, but bringing internet into every community, how we build out electric vehicle infrastructure, and a host of other issues that really matter to people in all of our communities.
What are you anticipating for the run-up to the midterm elections? Of course, most presidents face some hurdles, keeping control, keeping their party in control in Congress. A lot of the prognosticators already say that President Joe Biden's going to have an even tougher time than many presidents, that his popularity is pretty low. You also have a new map here in Michigan to contend with, and that new map has inspired you to run in a different space than you've served in since you've been in Congress. I wonder what you make of where we are with midterms and the case, I guess, that Democrats have to make to keep power in Washington.
So I have several things to say on this. First is, while I'm having to move my home, most of the current district that I represent in the new district that I represent. It has a new number. It has some new communities that I'm getting to know and spending time with, but it has my Down Rivers, it has Western Wayne, it has Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti and places that I know and love and I'm in every weekend. I respect the will of the people. We had an independent redistricting commission, and I'm abiding by what they did. Two, I will tell you that Michigan's going to be a very competitive state. I think it'll be one of the most competitive in the country. Dave Wasserman of Cook's Political Report says control of the House could come down to Michigan. Our governor's going to be one of the number one targeted races in the country. Michigan's going to be a very competitive state. But I also am someone who, one, thinks it's way too early to make predictions about November. I think I began to tell you about this point that I thought that Donald Trump could win, and I was fighting with you on Election Day about whether Donald Trump was going to
win.
When at that point I knew he was going to win, and most people were still doubting me even on Election Day, as you'll recall.
Mm-hmm.
The only poll that matters is the poll on Election Day. I think a lot of people are just unhappy, period, with everybody and everything. Democrats have to really talk about what they have done. I think all of us, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you need to worry about our democracy. You need to worry. I mean, what you are seeing in Ukraine, people are attacking democracies around the world. They are trying to divide us with fear and hate. And I hope that people are going to look at, what do they want for the future? What do they care about? What are the issues that they're going to, why are they going to vote? And I hope one of them is to protect our democracy. And they do want people that are going to make sure that their job is going to be okay, that they can put food on the table, that they can educate their children. If you're sick, be able to go to the doctor and afford your medicine and live in a community that's safe. We need to support our law enforcement, and we need to not be afraid to support. Defund the police is not an acceptable phrase. We have to stand up for what we really want and need and deliver that message. And if we do it and we really cut through and show people what our values are, I am someone who believes that we can still win in November.
Okay. Debbie Dingell, Democrat from Dearborn, who represents Michigan's 12th Congressional District, is, of course, always great to have you here on Detroit Today, but especially great to talk with you each year on Punchkey Day. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Stephen. Happy Punchkey Day, everybody.
When we come back, we're going to talk with author Dan Charnas about his wonderful new book on the life and music of J. Dilla. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.